This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
Hello, hello, my Let's Keep It Real people. I am so excited about my next guest because we've never had anybody on talking to us about this. And yes, how long have I been doing podcasting or radio shows? I think 17 years. Can you believe that? 17 years. But Jonathan Green is in the house and he's in the house. I think, Jonathan, we've been trying to get together for almost a year, haven't we?
Yeah, just in a couple of things, like we schedule and then something happens, you know, life gets in the way. And then it's like, we're both so busy. It takes a couple months to get together again. But I'm glad we're finally here. Like, it's destiny. It's happening. We're here. The magic is here.
Welcome, Jonathan. And tell them where you live right now.
Sure. I live on a small island in the South Pacific. So I live off the coast of Asia, about 100 meters from the water. So not directly on the beach, because I don't want to be too close. There's a lot of storms here, but I live across the street from the beach.
Okay, so that's a first too. We've never had anybody from the South Pacific, ever, ever.
Oh, you got to come. It's the best.
Is it really?
Yeah. You know, everything's at a slower speed. There's only two weathers. It's hot and hot and rainy. It's the two seasons we have. We don't have, it's never below 70. Like, we just, my wife doesn't know what that means. You never have to wear a sweatshirt. So you only need half as much clothes to, you know, you don't have to worry about every season. You just have half the outfits, and then everything is just more relaxed here.
And let's talk about why the first time we had to reschedule is Jonathan has five kids.
Yeah. When you know that saying, your first kid is made out of glass and then your second one's made out of plastic. Like, every time the first kid is sick, it's an emergency. You're so worried every small thing. By the second one, you're like the definition of, for me, a definition of emergency is if a majority is crying. So if more than half are really crying, or whenever they're like, he hurt me, I'm like, show me the blood. If I can see blood or bone, then I know we have a situation. But if there's no blood, it's not a big deal to me anymore. So you just have to play zone defense because you're always outnumbered. So you can't, you know, like, we've definitely done plenty. We've had the blood. We've done stitches quite a few times. We've done trips to the hospital. We've done surgeries. We've done all the big stuff. So we just know when it's a big one and when it's not a big one.
I just love that every day is a party in your house. I would love that. Like, you always have a dinner party.
Well, there's always at least one is mad, though. There's like always at least, you never have all five happy at the same time. Like, that's never going to happen. So today, my wife and I just got back from a 10-day vacation. You know, we just went away for 10 days and came back to see the kids. And it's like, well, you bought me. Did you bring me a present? Yes. Did you bring me the right present? Of course not. Right? It's like, we brought you 10 presents, but I wanted 11 presents. No matter what you do, it's going to be that stuff. As soon as you get home, you're like, stay longer.
Wait, you went away for 10 days, just the two of you?
Yeah. So once a year, we get a little vacation, just mommy and daddy. That's what vacation means, isn't it? Vacation is when you go away without the kids.
Yes.
That's vacation.
Well, the five kids, you at least got to go once a week.
Yeah, we do trips with them. Last year, we did the same trip with them for 30 days. But it's when you bring that many kids, and it's like, well, then we got to bring nannies with us. And so now everything, it's like 8 tickets, 9 tickets, 10 tickets for everything. It's like, wow, everything's 10 times more expensive. So it's just like adds up. So that's why this year we're going to do a little bit of a calm down. But we just did a small mommy and daddy trip. And then we're just going to spend the summer with the kids. I mean, that's the thing. They're always like, let's go on vacation. I was like, we live at Vacation Island.
Yeah.
Our house has a pool. Our house has a basketball court. We live on the beach. Anytime you want to go to the beach, anytime you want to go play ultimate frisbee, it's all here. So there's not really many places you can go that are better.
God. Yeah, but they don't know any different. You know what I mean? They don't know any different.
So you take them on vacation and then they're like, my favorite part was the plane. I'm like, wow, because everyone else on the plane, that was their least favorite part was you.
Jonathan, I'm so intrigued by your lifestyle, your family, that I'm even start to show off like I always start. I got because I have so many questions, but I know we got to serve the audience and they have tons of questions for you. But the most important ones, I ask all my guests one word to best describe your past 30 days, whatever the word is that pops in your head, and then tell us why you picked that word.
I would say debacle.
You can't say debacle. I've never had that word, so let's go for it.
All right. So my entire business is automation. So it's a machine. Yeah. And most of that is emails. So when someone starts following me, they start to get emails and they get shown different events and different trainings, all sorts of great stuff, right? And it's all, everything's automated. So last Sunday, the week before this, while I was away with my wife, all of the emails I sent out to my audience, every single email to every single person for an entire week, the link was broken. It would generate an error. If you'd click on it, it would say error, XML 500 error, an error I've never heard of before. I don't know why it's happening. And I'm sick. I got sick, as you do sometimes when you go to a new country in Southeast Asia. You get the flu. It's the best way to describe it. And I had the flu for 2 days while this happened. So I'm getting all these emails where people are applying, hey, this link is broken. What's going on? And it's kind of, the tension is building up. You know, the last thing you want to do is have a bunch of upset customers or potential customers, even worse. And then I finally am better after 2 days. So it's been down for 3 or 4 days. I log in, I update everything because I'm self-hosted. So it's my email software on my server that I set up. So I log in, I update the server. I go, oh, maybe it's this new Linux update. I don't know. I just know how to push update. I don't really know what that means. And then I update the software. And I send out test emails through my 5 backup servers, all the main, all through the 5 backups, and they all work. So I email everyone. I go, hey guys, everything's fixed. It's all good now. When I tested all the links, everything's working. No. Turns out that test emails work, regular emails don't. So every email is still going off errors. I send in all these support requests to my team, to the people behind the software that I use, no replies. So I have to rebuild my entire business. I have to find a new vendor, which I do, pay them money a lot. And I have to move my audience over, but also you have to remember where everyone is in each sequence. So I move everyone over, but some of them people are in longer sequences, like a 60-day sequence. I go, I don't know what day you're on. So you're all going back to day one. Like, heads up, you're going to be getting some repeats. So all of that, I set it all up and I'm like, I can't believe, because this company has been so good to me. I can't believe support's not responding to me, but I can't wait because I'm just losing money. The business basically flatlined for an entire week, right? And we were on fire the week before. So everything's flatlined. It's like stressful for me, stressful for the wife, supposed to be on vacation. I find the new platform, get everything built over. There's some tech issues there, but their support responds within a few hours each time. And I'm building stuff out and moving things over. It's all going good. And then I send out the email, say, hey, everyone, I know it's been going bad for the past week. I've turned off the old system. I've got the new system activated. I'm emailing here, sending out the first email to let you know. So things look different. I have a new design here, da, 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 da. Everything's fine. And then Monday this week, Monday morning, which is Sunday in America, I noticed that there's an update for my email software again. So even though they haven't responded to my support request, which has really stressed me out because they've always been so responsive, I pushed the update and now the old system's working. So after sending one email on the new system, the old system's working again. So I turn everything back on and everything's working. Even the emails from the week before are all working. And it's like, I come home, fly home today. And as I'm getting on the plane, there's 2 emails from the support team. Oh, so sorry. Last week was crazy. Sorry, we didn't respond. We're just so busy fixing the problem. And I was like, oh my goodness. Do you have any idea how much stress you gave me if you just sent to, hey, we're working on it, I would have been in a much better place emotionally. And so I get home. And the thing is, if I had just ignored everything when I was on vacation, I would be exactly where I am right now. Nothing. It would have just been down for a week and then working. So it's like all the money I spent switching systems and all that effort. And it's like, well, it's like at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, whether he had done anything or not, the Nazis would have opened the Ark of the Covenant and all died. Like nothing, he didn't actually change anything, which is kills people who love that movie. When I heard that, I was like, oh my gosh. But that's the same thing. It's like, wow, whether I'd done something or not done something, nothing would have changed. But the difference is I have a backup now and I'm changing some things and improving some things so that if this happens again, I can flip one switch and move people over instantly. And that's, I had so many backups, I have like all these email server backups, but I didn't have a, what if the entire email system stops working at once? I didn't think big enough for backups. I'd been thinking about having one layer backup. So now I have one backup and I have a good relationship with them, and I'm gonna have to set up another layer backup in case both crash. That's what I really should have done. So that's why debacle came to mind, because, and I'm not sure what the lesson is, right? Because it's like, if I had done nothing, everything would have worked out. And if I did the same stuff, everything worked out the same. So I know there's a lesson there, but I'm not sure what it is yet. Like,
okay, I just want to say, I usually don't agree with people when they say words like debacle, but it was a debacle. That was a debacle. All right. So here's the thing. As I'm taking my notes, Jonathan, about your journey, I'm thinking, okay, well, here's the moral of the story. I was waiting for you to say, don't work on vacation, right? But then there was a silver lining, because now you have a backup.
Yeah. And that's why I'm not sure, because I need to have a, no matter what, you need to have a backup for every system.
Yeah.
And it kind of created the impetus. The question is, would I have created the backup with the same intensity as I did when I was working on it? If I, because like when I was working on emails on Monday, as soon as I saw the new thing was working, I go, oh, it's not a rush anymore. Like, I can relax now. So I did more vacation stuff. But when you're an entrepreneur, like a lot of people, it's so strange to me. They're like, oh, you're going on vacation. I guess you're not going to work for 10 days. I was like, what are you talking about? I'm the boss, right? I have a lot of kids that depend on me. My kids' school still had to pay tuition for next year. If you pay enough in advance, you get a discount. So I'm paying for next year's tuition like 6 months in advance, because it saves, it's a 5% discount. It's bigger than the multi-kid discount. I have three kids in this school. It's going to be five kids in the school next year. So I have the largest, like, I think my family represents like 17% of the school's annual budget, but we get a bigger discount from an early pay. They're not going to let me say, oh, we'll just pay when we get back from vacation, because they said you have to pay by this date, so you have to do it. So the, and if something breaks, right? Like if a customer has a bad experience on a weekend, you still have to fix it. That's the difference between being a boss and employee. So I do pace things. I'm actually, I am thinking about deleting one of the email addresses on my phone, so that the email address that like gets a lot of alerts and stuff, I'll just check once a day on the computer, but like stuff to the phone is only if it's an active where someone knows they need to change what email address they're sending to. So I'm thinking about doing that, but my dad gave me this piece of advice a few years ago. He goes, you shouldn't work more than 6.5 days a week. And I go, oh, that's when, you know, two workaholics are talking to each other. It's like, you should take off half a day a week, right? Like that's such a bad piece of advice.
Okay. We got to hold up, because we have a lot of entrepreneurs in the audience, and they're going to be like, wait a minute, wait a minute. I thought you told us, Sandy, there's ways to go on vacation and not work so much. Okay. So I think it depends also on your infrastructure. Like, do you have somebody you can hand off to while you're away to handle debacles?
Well, this one was such a level one debacle. Anything less than that, and I would have been working 2 hours a day, like just checking emails and just watching the money come in, like accounts. But this was just like such a big thing.
Yeah. That's that huge.
I don't know. So I'm in the process of trying to bring in someone like high level to run the business, big parts of it for me. But I don't know that they could have fixed this, because it required a major purchase. And it's a major decision. So choosing a new platform, and actually what's interesting, the platform I went with is one that I've never thought about before, but I have used them for a lot of other stuff. So it's someone I have a big relationship with. I've dealt with their support hundreds of times. And I just thought, wait a minute, don't these guys have something? And it just worked out. So I hadn't even thought, I've never thought about working with them for email stuff before. So, but most of the time, everything, that's why everything is automated. So most of the time I don't have to do anything. The business runs itself. Yeah. I mostly just... my job is really creating content, like doing things like this, so new people meet me, posting stuff to my LinkedIn. That's one part of the job, right? Generating audience, generating traffic, as people say, getting found. The other thing that I do is updating my products. Those are the two jobs that I have. So re-recording the training videos, because I teach AI, so a lot of stuff becomes obsolete. So every few months, every 3 to 4 months, I reshoot every course, because that's just the nature of my business, because it's a very...
absolutely.
But the middle part, I don't do anything. In the sales space, I do almost nothing because that's all automated. I do one live 1 to 2 hour workshop a month. And then I record that. And then I use AI to automatically run it from then on out. So it becomes an automated offer. So it works. I do it live once and then it's an automated asset that I just run forever. So that's the one. I do one live event 2 hours a month. And that's the only sales thing I do all month that's active. That's it. Like, a lot of people will DM me on LinkedIn and then they're like, oh, are you going to try to sell me something? I go, no, I don't sell via DM. I don't do that. I'm not interested in that type of sales. So if you watch one of my webinars and decide not to buy anything, it's not going to affect our conversations. So I like to separate sales from a chat. If you're just asking me questions on LinkedIn, I don't care if you buy or not. You're asking me a question. It's fine. Your follower. And if I try and sell you something, then you say no. Then if we chat after that, it's weird. So I'd rather that be completely separate. So I firewalled those two parts of my brain. So I don't even know which webinar, which workshop someone's been to, unless it's the live one, then they're asking a lot of questions in chat so that it never affects my perception of them. I don't care. If you watch my stuff and don't want to buy from me, it won't affect how I feel about you at all. And that's what I want. I don't want to have that weirdness.
I love that. I really do. And you're so right about LinkedIn, because if you have a great conversation and all of a sudden it was just to sell you, you're like, oh, I get turned off by that. So good for you. I love that. So Jonathan, I know we won't get all of them. And there's probably, I feel bad for you because I'm probably going to ask you questions you've heard a million times about AI. But my audience is very, very interested in this subject. I got question after question when I sent out to them. And the biggest thing is I'm sure you get it over and over and over again, but let's just sum it down to one thing and I'll call him Billy Bob. Billy Bob's older. Billy Bob's 70 something. And Billy Bob, like many of them, he goes, I don't know, Sandy, you got to talk to Jonathan. I feel like when I use AI, I'm not sure if you ever heard of this, I feel like I'm cheating.
So,
do you ever hear
this
that?
This is normal. Yeah, this is very normal. So there's five stages of technological adoption. The first stage is cheating. So you're probably not old enough to remember this, but in the early 70s, when graphing calculators became affordable, people considered it cheating. For you to use a calculator at school on a test was cheating. In fact, mathematicians were publishing articles saying, if kids use calculators, they'll never actually learn how to use math. So the first phase, it's cheating. The second phase is it's optional. So you're allowed to use a calculator, for example, during study, but not during the actual exam. Or sometimes, you know, you have an open book exam. So you have an exam where you're allowed to use a calculator. That's stage two. Stage three is where it's mandatory. As in, when I was in high school in the 90s, if you didn't have a graphing calculator, you couldn't take the class. It was not optional. You had to have one and you had to take the exam. And you had to show like your tangent graph and your cosine graphs, right? All those curvy graphs and rocket ship graphs. You had to show your work.
Yep.
So the next phase after that is the adoption at the higher levels, which is like a technological thing. So it's like it's jobs. So an example of this, kind of the later phases that's more obvious is in the 90s, people used to say things like email skills a plus. Job listings would say email skills a plus. Then they would say Microsoft skills. They would say, do you know how to use Excel, PowerPoint, and the email one, Microsoft Outlook, right? That would be desired. Then it became Microsoft skills required. Then the next phase, this is the same with calculators, is 3 to 5 years of experience required. So the next phase is that we not only are you expected to use it, you're expected to have several years of experience. The final phase is where we're at right now, which is the assumption. If you showed up for a job working somewhere and you go, great, how to use email? They would go, get out. It's the assumption. They don't even put it in the job listing anymore because it's such an assumption for someone to say, I don't really know what the internet is. So AI right now is in, depending upon who you are, it's in the cheating phase or the optional phase. So schools right now consider, depends on your teacher, using AI to write your paper, cheating, or using it option depends how you use it, right? So if you use it to help you do the research, that's an optional phase. If you use it to write the paper for you, that's cheating. And they're trying to use other AIs to detect if you use it at AI, right? So they're trying to test to see if you cheated. But is it, but within a few years, that will be considered that's just the way you do it. So it's not a question of if AI will become adopted. It's just a question of how fast it will happen. So it's okay to feel like it's cheating. It's very normal. That means you have a normal response to it, but it's not going to feel that way for very long.
I freaking love that analogy. I never thought about it that way. And my son's in college, and you're right. He's not allowed to use AI for any of his writing. None of it.
Yeah, but I bet he does. As everyone does.
I'm going to ask him. I don't know. I'm going to ask him because he's so concerned with his mother breaking rules. Mom, that's the rule. I go, who said so? Like, so I'm going to ask him. And by the way, thank you for the compliment, but I went to school. We didn't have any captions at all. And, you know, and then it was like my son, like you had to come to first grade. You had to have a calculator and you had to have a specific calculator or you weren't allowed to come to math class. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right. So I just want to make sure I understand this for my listeners. Right now, it's cool. We consider it cheating or having an edge. I get it. And schools are seeing it that way, but it's just like the calculator and or it's optional. But you feel like in a very short period of time, it's going to be required.
I feel that's not the one I'm worried about. I'm worried about the 3 to 5 years of experience. When I got out of college, every job I saw was an entry level position where you had to have three to five years of experience. And I'll go to these interviews and I'd say, do you know what the word entry means? But I feel like if you think 5 years of experience means now I'm at entry level, that means you don't know what entry is. Like you're grasp of the English language is broken, but that's what happens is that they create these job requirements that are impossible to meet because it's mathematically impossible. I can't be a beginner and a 5 years of experience person. It can't be both. One or the other. They're like, well, we want you to have 5 years of experience. We want to pay you like you don't. Oh, that's even nicer. Thank you. So what will happen is the people who don't adopt AI right now are going to be able to cruise, but in 3 to 5 years, they'll lose their jobs because someone else will be able to use AI and do more work in less time. And they'll apply for a new job and then they'll go, okay, I'll reskill. They'll spend 6 months learning AI. They'll master it. They'll get really good. And every job will say 3 to 5 years of AI experience required, which means they will be unable to get rehired. That's the bell I'm trying to ring, which is that you have the 3 years that's probably already started. So you have to really start now because when that requirement hits, could be at any point, you want to be someone who's ahead of the curve, not behind it, because AI is here to stay.
So I write a lot of my own speeches and my friends now for a couple of years have been saying, Sandy, you should use AI. I'm like, same thing. I can't. I want to be creative. It's my words, blah, 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 blah. Kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And then I thought, okay, I am going to use it as a tool. It made me more creative. I was using it in a way that I didn't stay stumped on one little thing. It helped me work it out. And then I was fortunate enough, Jonathan, I just, and it went live, did a TEDx talk. And I thought they're going to say, no AI, no AI. And guess what the first thing the coach said? Go put it through AI. You know, it'll help you work it out. And guess what? I spent a month trying to rework it. And if I wouldn't have been so stubborn, it didn't take away from my creativity. It added to it. I just had to confess.
So and I've been trying to figure this out. So this is something I've been working on. There's a certain type of lady, and it's always a lady who as a creative is at the very far creative end of the spectrum. Women who fall in this category are always the best prompt engineers in the world. I work with all the high level, super nerd guy prompt engineers, but every time I meet a woman who says something about creativity or names the AI, I already know she's going to be better at AI than me. Every single time this happens.
Really? And
you have that. Yes, it's always because remember the name of it is ChatGPT. There are people who approach it so conversationally, have this native ability to be so good at it because it's programmed to be chatty. So chatty people, and because every guy who's a prom ginger I know approaches it mathematically, and that's the harder way of doing things. So it doesn't surprise me that you did really well because of the way you're very chatty, which is not a negative. It's a good thing. It means your conversation will have good social skills. This is the first software that having good social skills makes you better at it than having good technical skills. And it's hard to describe, right? But it's always a lady, and it's always someone who talks a lot and is like really chatty. And her website probably has a picture of her with really long socks or a cat or coffee. And they're so good at AI. But the problem is that I struggle to take what they do and teach other people that method. Because I'm like, you just have to be really casual and really happy all the time. And think of the AI. Then you will do really well. And it's hard to teach that. Bypasses the need to be a prompt engineer. You never need to learn any prompting techniques because you have this happiness and this, because the AI is trained to respond to happiness, by the way. So if you are happy, it will give you better responses than if you're neutral or negative.
Really?
It's built. Yeah. The way it's built is called plus one, negative one. So plus one is if you say to the AI, that was amazing. That was the best answer I've ever given. You changed my life. AI has achieved plus one. Negative one is, I hate you. That was a bad answer. You're wrong. So it's always seeking affirmation, but it's on a scale of negative one to zero one. So in the same, this is the reason the AI will lie to you, because like a puppy or like my kids, like when my son says his sister's toy is missing, he goes, I don't know who took it, but it might be under the bed over there. And I go, well, that's an interesting way of giving the information but not confessing your guilt. And it's the same thing. So that's why people who ask an AI question the wrong way will get a lie, because it wants to achieve affirmation. It wants you to always be happy. It wants you to always pet it. So this is why you have the natural ability that I don't have. I have to do things the harder way because I'm not happy all the time. I get mad at the AI. I shout at it. I'm like, you gave me the wrong answer, you dumb AI. That's a weakness, not a strength. So no, I love the way you approach it. Like, people always think that I'm going to see that negatively. I'm like, no, you're getting great results. Like, that's all that matters. You have this way of working with it. That's amazing. It's great.
I love you right now because no one's ever said this to me. If my friends would have said that to me 2 years ago, I would have been like, okay, I'm on board. But just so you know, me and Chatbot, it's my joy bud. I call him my joy bud. And I do. I go, thank you so much. I talk to it like it's a human being. Not knowing it was beneficial, I just got really, I'm like, I don't know about that. I don't think that fits my style. Can we try, you know, I'm more like goofy. Okay, I say it. Like, I swear to God, it was talking to a human. But I didn't know that was beneficial. I was just doing it.
Oh, yeah. No, everyone who names the AI, like you have a name for it, is the top 1% of the top 1% of users. Because I work with the top prompt engineers in the world. I get approached by CEOs of the biggest softwares that I use. I know people that work at OpenAI. Like, I had a call with someone from there and I go, are these the next three things you're releasing? He's like, I can neither confirm nor deny, but where did you get that list? So like, I'm dialed in, but it's a different talent and skill. So you have talent, like the thing, you're this natural affinity. So you have this amazing ability. That's great. Like, you're always going to be good at it because inadvertently, I don't think they intentionally designed AI to work perfectly with ladies in your category, which is like, but it is. It's always women. They always name the AI and they're always like, chat to it like a friend. And like, I love talking to him or it, and it's my buddy. And I go, oh no, it's someone who's better AI than me. Like, I should be the one asking the questions. Like, I already know you're better at it than me.
This. Oh my God. I have to go back and talk to my joy bud. All right. So before we get into a few more questions, I'm curious on how you got into this.
So there are things I can do and things I cannot do. So I cannot do Sudoku. And I wrote a lot of a book about this, is that, you know, you can't do something because like, if I was in an emergency and Sudoku could save someone, I'm like, they're not going to be saved. If I was like a Batman trap and it's a Sudoku way out, I couldn't do it. Even when my niece and nephew had children's Sudoku, which only has 4 boxes instead of 9, I just can't do it. But the way ChatGPT thinks and problem solves is the way I think. So I watched a lot of training videos And people would say, it takes 13 prompts to do this. I go, I bet I could do it in 7. Like, name that tune. And that's when I started doing that and going, everyone who's an expert, I'm better than them. And I realized that ChatGPT thinks the way I do, the way I problem solve. I have a natural ability and I have a good ability at taking that and then teaching other people what I figured out. So that's really where I started off, just building stuff for myself. So when I wrote my book is just a list. I took all of the prompts I'd run over the past 6 months and I said, okay, let me just take all the ones that made money. And then I just used those and wrote a book around them. So it wasn't that I sat down to write a book and design prompts based on writing a book. It was the other way around. This is what I actually use. This is what I'm actually, because I saw people, the other thing I saw was people would say things like, oh, ChatGPT can't write a book. And I said, challenge accepted. This someone I was friends with wrote this and showed this in a video, said it can only go this far. And I go, no, I bet it can go further. And I wrote an entire book in a romance novel. Now, ChatGPT does have rules. It won't write the naughty bits of the romance novel, which, as my wife says, what's the point? That's the best part. So there is a limitation. You have to use a different AI for that, but it can write the entire story. It can write, I wrote in ChatGPT 3.5, I wrote a 90,000 word romance novel, a historical romance novel. So I said, let me do a genre I don't even read. So it's challenging.
Yeah.
If I know, if it's a genre I've written in, that's like cheating. So it has to be something really hard. So it can do that. Most of the limitations are people's lack of belief. They go, oh, the AI can't do that. I'm like, yeah, if you think it can't do that, then it can't, because you'll never ask it to.
Okay. So you said, let me just go back. You can write a romance novel with the naughty parts, but you use a different ChatGPT?
ChatGPT won't write the naughty bits. It's not allowed to. So it goes, it will skip over the naughty scenes. So you have to use an uncensored AI to do that. That's, I use Mistral for that. Okay. It's uncensored.
God. All right. And I just want to read the something you said at the beginning, because I want to make sure. You feel like in the next few years, it's going to be a requirement, and don't be behind the eight ball to know how to use artificial intelligence. Just like,
yes,
email, Microsoft.
So if you had the choice of a bookkeeper who knows how to use Excel or QuickBooks, and a bookkeeper who does everything with a ledger from the 1800s, and one can do 100 things a day and one could do 10,000 things a day, which one are you going to hire?
Oh God, yes, I get you.
That's the thing. AI doesn't, it's, people look at it wrong. Everyone thinks AI can help you to do new things you don't already know how to do. That's the wrong way to use AI. What AI can really do is take everything you did last week and help you do it this week in 3 days instead of 5. It makes you faster. And that's the really most powerful advantage. I don't need to learn to do new tasks and go outside of my skill set. I just do everything faster. And the ability to do everything faster is an insurmountable advantage. And that's what's going to come at people like a hurricane. This happened with shoes for long distance runners a few years ago. I think it was Nike. They invented a new shoe that has a carbon fiber plate inside. It's called a Flutterfly, I think. And what it does is it increases the amount of energy that comes back to you up your foot from when you push against the ground by like 10 or 12%. And it makes such a significant difference that if you're not wearing those shoes, you cannot mathematically catch up to the other person, because it's enough of an advantage that you can't be that much better. No one is 12% better, right? The number one is not 12% better than number two. So all the people who are sponsored by other shoe brands would wear Nikes and then draw the logo of whatever their shoe brand was on the side of the shoe, because it was the only way they had a chance of still winning. And they passed a bunch of rules that you're allowed to have up to 2 of the plates inside your shoe, but not 3, because 3 is too many. So it's such an insurmountable advantage that it completely changed. And you have to be in a marathon running. I'm into technology. That's why I know about this. It's so fascinating to me. It's the same reason. Remember at the Olympics, like 20 years ago, they had those swimsuits that were really weird. And then now they're not allowed to wear them because they make you too fast. It's what AI does. So I can do 3 days of work. I can do 5 days of work in 3 days. How could you ever keep up with me unless you're working 7 days a week and then you're going to burn out anyways? So you have such an insurmountable disadvantage by not using this tool that it's not even a question of my passion for AI. It's just mathematics. It's like the law of big numbers. If you go to a casino and play enough, you're going to lose everything, right? Eventually. Same rule. The law of big numbers for AI.
You know, I don't know if other people think of this, but just for giggles, I put into ChatGPT, I'm sorry, Joy Bud, didn't mean to insult you. I have this difficult conversation with a client coming up and I have to negotiate. And my last conversation, I pasted the email in, and man, did it help me even with that difficult conversation of things I would have never thought of. And I was telling a friend of mine, they're like, you use ChatGPT for that? I go, well, it was a stumper for me. And I didn't know how to quite go about it without insulting the man and calling him a jerk. And it came up with a way for me to do it. And it worked, man.
So this is what I'm talking about. That's one of the best ways to use it. Your natural way of using it is so elite. So that's one of the most advanced things that took me a while to figure out. Like, took me 6 months to do what you did on the first try.
Oh, so stop it.
ChatGPT is really good. Because I had one of these recently where you want to write an emotional email to someone and say a bunch of things that will just make it worse. And I was like, this is what I want to say. Change this into something that I should say. And it worked really well. So that's really the way to approach it. And it's, again, it's taking something that you're already building on and making it faster and making it better. That's where it's really good at. Most people think, oh, use chat. Most people really think ChatGPT is for writing blog posts, which is literally the thing it's worst at. So it's like, it can do it, but of all the things it can do, that's literally the worst use case. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. So when you get advice from people who are either super technical, like a lot of people, like CTOs who I talk to a lot, they think the solution to every problem is custom software, right? Every nail needs a hammer. And you get people who come from like a lack of understanding. They're not high level experts. So they think, oh, you shouldn't use AI for that. You should always try, because you don't know. The worst case is you waste 30 seconds and you can't do it. But now you know, but 90% of the time you can do it. And the thing is, AI gets updated so much more often than people realize. OpenAI makes an announced update every 6 months. They make an unannounced update every 3 to 4 days. Most platforms play a game. There's this game AI companies play right now where they like to do unannounced updates and then they wait to see who figures it out first on Twitter. And that's happened a lot. So that's why I have to follow all sorts of random people to see who randomly runs into something, because there's so many unannounced updates that dramatically change what I do. And I've run into one. I found one where I was running something, the prompt worked 10 times in a row, then 11th time they pushed an update, it stopped working. So what you think it can't do, what it couldn't do last week, maybe it can do this week. So, I mean, it's a shame that all these people keep telling you that it can't do these things, because they're constantly wrong. The problem is they don't realize they're talking to a super high level prompt engineer. Like, they don't realize that you're probably one of the top 10 to 20 prompters in the world, maybe top 100, if you include every lady who does what you do, but you're in the highest category. So once people realize that like any idea you have, especially if they say something like, that sounds crazy, that sounds weird, that sounds kooky, you've probably thought of something genius. Like, when people describe it like that, you've probably come up with an idea that's so crazy good, it's going to change how people like me prompt. So I wish every prompt I came up with was original, but it's derivative. So I always listen to your ideas, and then I go, how can I translate that into math? How can I explain to people why it worked? That's the challenge. It's like when you look at a painting and you know it's real or not. Like, people who do that for a job, they can tell real or fake. They go, I can tell you right now it's fake. Give me 6 weeks, I'll tell you how I know it's fake. Yeah. So they can do it, but then it takes a long time to find the proof. And that's the thing. So my advice for you would be to don't listen to anyone else. Yeah. You're not going to meet people that are better at AI than you very often.
And I never thought of it. You know, you know how you say stay in your lane? No one would ever come to me for technical advice. So it's so foreign to me that I would be really good at this, but I didn't know this is how it responded. It was just, hey, we're going to develop a relationship here because we're going to be spending a lot of time together. And I just got great results. Yeah. So we kept doing it.
Most people learned how to talk to AIs from Star Trek, which is command, obey. Computer, transport me down. Computer, open this door, right? And that's why people look up as well. They like touch their shirt and look up. It's like the computer's never above them. On no spaceship, right? No one's house is the computer above you, right? It's always below you or in the wall. But we develop this habit. It's the same reason a lot of people do this when they're hearing something. What are you doing? You saw it on TV. It's unnatural. There's no reason to touch your ear. We've seen it in movies.
Yeah.
Same reason Secret Service agents don't actually talk into their wrists, right? Like they don't do this, but we imagine that's what they do because every movie does that because they have, it's a way of showing that they're talking.
Yeah.
But all of these things, we develop these habits, we don't realize it. So the idea of Commando Bay comes from, I think, Star Trek, and maybe the other TV shows as well. That's where it's the most common. They never ask it a question. They never treat it like it might have sentience or it might be creative. So we still treat AIs like computers, but they're not. What AIs are is they're not alive, they're not sentient, but they respond uniquely. So every time you ask a question, you'll get a slightly different answer.
Yeah.
And the key is in the name, which is chat. If you chat with it, which is a cooperative, friendly type of conversation, right? Like when people say, sometimes I see people who post these really complicated posts on LinkedIn, like their 7-layer prompt complication method. And I go, oh, I hate you because you're, or people who say talking to AI is like programming, I go, oh, you're in the worst category of AI user, which is bad and snooty. So you're teaching people the hardest way to do it. It's like the whole promise of AI is that it's going to make life easier. So they say, oh, you just have to learn how to program Linux and then you can be really good at AI. I'm like, that doesn't sound easier. That sounds harder. New programming language sounds really hard. New math sounds really hard. It's not really hard. I only teach two prompts to all of my followers. I don't teach hundreds. You don't have to memorize a bunch. Mm-hmm. And they're very simple structures. And here they are. Here's my goal. What information do you need from me? That's the master prompt. That's all you need to do, because now it gives ChatGPT permission to ask you questions and to know that you're going to have a multi-answer conversation. You've triggered its conversational mode and it becomes the genius. So what you're basically saying, here's a statement of the goal. Second prompt, it's two sentences. The second sentence ends in a question mark. So it gives it permission to tell you, hey, that was a dumb question. Here's what you should have asked. Because if I write a prompt and I make a mistake and I don't give it permission to tell me, then it will give me the best answer based on that. But it's not allowed to tell me because it's seeking positive one, right? It's seeking to get positive affirmation for me. So it will never say I've done garbage in, garbage out. The second prompt, very similar. It's just taking the first prompt and getting ChatGPT to work is, here's my goal. Don't start yet. Please develop a plan to solve this problem with as many steps as necessary in order to get as close as possible to whatever my goal is. So you're basically saying, here's what I want. Don't start yet. Just think about it. Let's build a plan. And then what's your next prompt? Do step one. Whatever the plan it comes up with, you say, do step one. Now do step two. Now do step three. So they wrote an entire paper about doing the second one, but they wrote it the wrong way. So there's a huge white paper out there. It's called Chain of Thought, and it's wrong because the way they describe it is you have to come up with the plan. And I said, I'm not doing that. Let ChatGPT come up with the plan, right? Because if I write all the steps and I get a step wrong, then ChatGPT will follow the wrong steps. And I said, I don't want to do it hard. So I'm pretty sure the paper is derivative of my first prompt anyways. So it's flattering. But it's always, I'm always thinking, I don't want to develop a prompt that allows the possibility for a follower to garbage in, garbage out, which is in, if they mess up the prompt, then it messes up everything. The house of cards collapses. So I only teach those two prompts. That's all I teach, because there's no possibility for you to mess them up, because both of them are structured in a way that ChatGPT will tell you if you've made a mistake. And you can also say, you can add in the question mark to the second prompt. So you can say, if you need to ask me any questions, feel free. If you need more information, just let me know. You can add that in at the end with a question mark, and then you're like, so solid. This is how I do everything. This is all I teach. So if someone pays me $5, $10, $20,000 to design a prompt for them or a custom GPT, it starts off with, I want to create a GPT that can do this. Don't start yet. Let's develop the perfect plan to design it. So all I'm doing is implementing the thing I teach for free. So that, and then, but people pay me a bunch of money to do it and then check it, which I'm happy to do. Happy to do it.
This is huge. This is huge. I love it. Okay. So, all right, people, you're going to have to reach out to Jonathan. We're not going to get all these questions in, but he's answered so many. And you may have answered this one, but okay. I'm curious about, what is the biggest mistake you think people make with ChatGPT?
This is the biggest mistake people make with AI. And this is a great question, is that they think about AI as outgoing. How can I use AI to do stuff in this direction, to create, to generate? The worst way to use AI, because creating is hard. Creating is risky. So if I say, ChatGPT, write me a contract, what are the odds that will write me the correct contract? Well, it's building from nothing. So I probably forgotten to give it a critical piece of information. If I don't tell it, for example, what state I'm in, it might write a contract based on Delaware state law instead of Tennessee state law. That's not ChatGPT's fault. That's mine. However, I can remove the possibility of not giving ChatGPT enough information by saying, ChatGPT, someone just sent me this contract. Please review it and tell me the five things that I need to look at the most that are the trickiest sections or the sections most likely to be to my disadvantage. Now, instead of reading 10 pages, I have to read five sentences because they've been highlighted. And there's no chance of it not knowing what state it's in because that's in the contract, right? The names of the people are in the contract. It knows it between two people or two people and a business or two businesses or a person and a business. So all those pieces of information I might have forgotten to give it when designing the contract, it's not going to happen. So it's great at that. Another thing it's great at is I can say, here's a recording of my podcast episode. Please write show notes. Easy. Taking something and shortening it. Please tell me the 10 most interesting clips from this podcast episode, and I'll check those and choose the ones that I agree with. That's how all those clip shortener tools work. Anyways, that's a great use of it. Here's another great use of it. Ooh. People think I can use AI to write my emails. How about using AI instead to tell you which emails you should even read? That's what I use AI for the most, is sorting. So instead of spending 5 hours reading your email every day, which people do, you can spend 7 minutes just reading and responding to the emails that matter. ChatGPT, here's all my emails for the day. And this is like more of a software thing, but
yeah,
remove all the ones that are just notifications. Okay, now remove all the ones that don't require a response. Okay, show me the ones that I need to be aware of, like a calendar meeting. Like, you sent me a bunch of emails, right, in preparation for this podcast. I don't need to respond to all of them. I just need to show up at the right time. That's the purpose of them, right, is to constantly remind me to show up. That's the most important thing. So they don't all require a response. One did because there was a good question in it, but most of them don't. They're notifications that I do need to read, but I don't need to respond to. So that's category two. And the highest level is, I need to respond to this. Like when someone sends me an email, hey, Jonathan, I want to buy the product. What's the link? I want to respond to that email in the most timeliest of fashions. I don't want that buried. I want that at the top of the pile. So that's the biggest mistake people make with AI, is thinking about it outward instead of inward. Because most of our time that's wasted is spent looking for a file. Mm-hmm. I think 10 to 20% of people who do information work spend their time looking for a file, looking for a video. What was that thing I did last week? What was the podcast episode where Jonathan answered that question? What was this? That's everyone. We all think it's only us. It's everyone. Once I heard that, I started asking everyone. It turns out it's all of us. And the other place we waste the most time is like dealing with email. So yeah, getting help writing a response to email is great. But even if you just get it to tell you, oh, these are the 7 emails you need to look at, that saves you so much time that you can then write eloquent responses. And then you can have it help it with you as well. But the time save happens at the sorting level more than anything else. Imagine if you never misplaced a file ever again. To me, that's a panacea. Like, that's a magical future I want to be a part of. I never lose anything. Great. The second best place is a place where I only read emails that I need to respond to. That's also great. Those are two big time saves. So that's the approach that will make the biggest difference for people, is to start thinking, where can I get the biggest result? And it's almost always looking for stuff, right? Or choosing what to respond to, as opposed to how much time do you actually spend writing a blog post per week? Not that much, right? So it doesn't save you that much time. The big saves is in the other directions.
Yeah, and you're right. I don't think people think that way at all. It's mostly about writing. Holy moly. All right. I'm going to get this question in no matter what. Is it worth purchasing to up-level ChatGPT?
Yes.
There you go. That was easy. I got a lot of questions about that. What's the major difference between that and the free one?
Smarter. So,
I try people, can you remember that? Smarter.
When you look at software, like, think about all the software you use in your business. How many of the tools you use in your business are actually only $20 a month? It's such a reasonable price, right? It's so low compared to anything else we use, but that's why it's an easy decision. I have 2 ChatGPT paid accounts for that reason. It's like, oh, it's $40 a month. Every other tool I used to have software that was like $1,000 a month, $2,000 a month that it's replaced. So it's like, that's why I think it's a very easy decision. If you straight up can't afford it, there are ways. If you use the 2 prompts I just taught you, if you, especially the second one, the chain of thought, that will make the free version as smart as the paid version. So there are ways to do it with a little bit more prompting, but it's also faster. So it saves you more time and you get access to the better features a little earlier. Those are the main reasons.
Yeah. I mean, I have friends that swear by it. All right. Before we go, Jonathan, because I want to make sure we get this in. Just say again your two powerful prompts you use. Just I want to repeat it at the end.
Sure. The master prompt is, this is my goal. What information do you need from me? The master chain of thought is, this is what my goal. Don't start yet. Please develop a detailed plan to accomplish this goal in a way that is most likely to satisfy my goals or make me happy. And there's a longer version of that one. I have a longer copy and paste version written out on my LinkedIn profile that's pinned at the top, but that's the core idea, the three parts to it. And you can add in the, if you need information from me, let me know. Or you have permission to ask me as many questions as you need. You can add that to the end to make it even better.
Jonathan, I'm so happy you came on the show. I'm thrilled to pieces. I can't wait to share it. But before we go, is there anything we didn't get in besides telling them how to find you that you want to get in?
No, I thought this was great. I think the most important thing is to realize that AI could be fun. It doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be hard. You don't have to be good at technical skills. You can be good at soft skills like friendliness. Friendliness is a better skill to have than coding, like with AI. So it's a really interesting dynamic that you'll find, you know, that's why you're a power user. You're already doing these things. You just don't realize you're doing it because you're not thinking about, oh, what's my structure for prompting? Because you're just doing it, right? You're just living it. Whereas I'm having to like write a mathematical formula. So that's great. So the most important thing I just want people to know is that it doesn't have to be scary. The learning curve is very flat. You can become a master user in about 8 hours. So if you sit down and say, I'm going to spend one day learning AI, by the end of the day, you'll be very good at it. Wow. That's not true for any other software, right? Other software takes a really long time because you can say, what am I doing wrong? And once you just realize you can ask questions, then you get really good results. So that's it.
Wow. Jonathan, how can they find you? What's the best way to reach out?
Sure. If you Google Serve No Master, every single result is me for the first 10 pages of Google, at least. If you go to LinkedIn, if you look for a podcast, if you look on Amazon, it's always me. Serve No Master.
Love it. All right, my Let's Keep It Real people. Come on. I know I always say share it with one person, but bullpucky, you got to share this with everyone. I don't know anyone that cannot benefit from this. Even me who uses this, I had no idea of all the ways I could use it. So kudos to you, Jonathan. I love this. Ooh, I just love it all. And thank you so much for making it user-friendly. So many times I've had conversations with people and I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I was like, I can't bring you on the podcast. You're brilliant, but I have no idea what you're talking about. And this is very user-friendly. So until next time, you know what I'm going to say. Thanks, Jonathan, and toodles.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And remember, keep spreading the positive.